Welcome back to Bad Gay Movies. I am Bill, and this is episode 183, covering the UK film In From the Side. I do try, at least once every season, to get in a relatively new release to cover, just to see how things are going in the world of gay movies, good or bad. Hopefully we'll have more in the next season. But until then, enjoy today's episode in which I talk to returning guest Gregory Roseborough. He was on earlier this year talking about Closet Monster, and I love to have him on as often as possible because, you know, he is a favorite movie buddy and dear friend, and also plays rugby, so I thought he would be the perfect guest to have this week to talk about this film. So enjoy that, and either before or after you are done, give us a rating and or a review on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Follow us on the socials, Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. Write to us at badgaymovies2013@gmail.com. Visit us at badgaymovies.com. We are almost at the end of the season, so of course, we want to know what you want us to talk about as I gather up episodes for next season. Enjoy the show.
For a few days after that. Now for man of the match, well done, Mark Newton.
Are you in the A squad? I saw you at the clubhouse earlier, but I've not seen you around before.
You've been out for a while with an injury. I'm Warren.
Everything all right?
I have a boyfriend. He's in my team.
So take a breath and feel your head in my heart.
Welcome to Bad Gay Movies. I am your host, Bill Antoniou, and returning today is, of course, one of BGM's favorite guest hosts, certainly one of my favorite people. You recently heard him on an earlier episode this season, even though it's actually been months since he's done this, and I'm so grateful that he agreed to return for a movie that I figured he could connect with because it's about white people and athlete's foot. And the film is In From the Side by Matt Carter. But before we get to that, please welcome my very darling, Gregory Roseborough.
Hey, Bill. Hey, everyone. I also relate to this movie because, as you know, I now play rugby.
Yes, that's right. You do. See, I was watching this and I thought I'm going to ask Greg about all the things about rugby that I don't understand. Not because I remembered that you played it, but because I know that you do have a tendency to allow yourself to be blindfolded by teams of people and then and then railed by strangers. So I just assume you know more about sports than I do. And so to begin with, it actually took me a long time to figure out what was actually going on in this film. I did not realize at first that it was a gay rugby team. I sat down to this movie thinking it was going to be another coming out story about a guy who's having to deal with being the gay guy on a team of rugby players and what that would. But then they're all, you know, laughing it up at the local queer bar together. So it turns out it's a gay rugby team, which doesn't surprise me that exists in modern day England or anywhere else, but.
Well, yeah, it's funny because usually the movies we watch, they're coming out dramas where what's at stake is that straight people might find out the main character is gay. Right. In this, what's at stake is that the gossip queens of the team might find out that two of them are fucking.
Well, what's at stake is that we might figure out that everyone in the world is an alcoholic. That's actually what we're in danger of finding out. That we know watching this movie that no one seems to realize in the film until one character decides to deal with it. Also, A team, B team. So is that like a main team in alternates? Is that what's going on there? Is that a rugby thing or is that how these guys are playing it?
I'm not familiar. That's not something I'm familiar with. I think what it is they've... what I understood from the movie was this is an established club.
Right.
And one of their junior coaches, as a passion project, has created this like new
team. The farm team, basically. Yeah. That's what I figured.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. But I think he's created like a little queer team out of it.
But I feel like the A-team is gay too. I feel like it's a gay rugby league.
Oh, that would make sense then. Then the other one is...
Because when they play other teams, there's never one team that they play who are all like a bunch of jocks being like, oh, today's the day we're going to play the queers. And, like, they never make that...
No, you're right. No, it is an incubator situation. Yeah, all the shittier players play on the B team.
Yeah, and then I guess the story... Because there's this B story of like whether or not it's financially lucrative. Or like, there's a concern with whether or not they can... financially sustain the creation of this B team.
Yeah, they must be playing like some smaller league, like smaller fish kind of situation.
I also like to think that I know my way around the hairiest of English accents. I don't know if it was the quality of the copy I was watching, but I only got like one out of every third word in this movie.
Oh, I didn't struggle with that. I struggled with that these are supposed to be rugby players, but they all have the exact same build.
Everyone looks the same.
Yeah, and in rugby is that sport where it's said there is a position for every body type and a body type for every position.
Oh, I feel like that's also what also you write on Grindr.
yeah, I do. From the radiator where I'm chained up. But this movie wants us to believe, at least those of us who like learned a thing about rugby last week. By the way, everyone, it's the World Cup of rugby right now.
Oh.
But it wants us to believe that one of the two romantic. You look so enthused.
Oh, great. I mean, it's a hot sport. It's a sexy sport. You know, like high socks and tiny shorts and, you know, boys who look good in t-shirts. And it's always like the right level of scruff. And
some of them have wear polos as their jerseys. The South African team wears polos. They look very, very spiffy.
Yeah. And I've been to a rugby game in Australia. I went to it's actually Aussie rules football, but yeah, it's basically rugby.
Well, you should come watch us play sometime because Mike's a real bitch on the field.
Can't wait.
But what I was going to say before we went on that tangent is Warren Hunt, one of the two romantic leads in this movie.
Yeah.
We're supposed to believe he's a prop. And a prop is one of the two people who's at the front of... like a ruck, which is that big tackling mess you see that makes no sense. They need to have the body type of Bob Hoskins. He doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Oh, your dream. Yes. My dream, Bob Hoskins, especially showering in the Long Good Friday.
Yeah.
But this this guy has the body type more of like an inside center, an outside center.
Okay.
But they all look like, honestly, they all look like soccer players. There's no variance.
Which is what I think people think rugby players look like. Other than the one, there's that one who's like stockier, the one who is singled out for being the biggest bitch or whatever at the end when they're giving out their awards. He's got like a stockier build of what you're describing.
But, yeah,
yeah.
It was a weird move on the part of the movie. They could have tried to cast people who looked more like a rugby team. Like rugby teams are usually like people who are muscular with a layer of beer over it.
Nice, your dream again. So the essential plot of this movie is that two members of the rugby team, one from the A team, one from the B team, fall in love, have this clandestine affair, despite the fact that they're both partnered with other people. And from this seemingly simple premise comes a great deal of melodrama, much of which I don't feel is earned. And a lot of it as the result of the fact that we never see the main character come to terms with the fact that he picks the wrong men and that he doesn't hold anybody responsible for the way they treat him.
Did it ever feel like the movie was, in its tone, was going in the direction of Unfaithful?
Yes, totally. Because one of the first time, not the first time they hook up, but I think it's like the second time when they're in his apartment and they're like chatting on the couch, there's this like dark, ominous music playing under what they're talking about the entire time. And I'm like, why do we need this?
Yeah, the music is doing so many things in this movie. This movie has at different times been bros, Unfaithful.
Yeah.
At one point, there's a Christmas montage that feels like Love Actually.
Or like a Hallmark movie, yeah. When they go skiing at his family's holiday chalet in, I don't know, where is it? In an Alp somewhere. And we find out his mother is a drunken whore.
Discount Julie Christie.
Totally. Played by a bad actress, too. I was disappointed with that. This is how you know. This movie looks like money, but you know that it's very indie British. Because in an even slightly bigger indie movie in England, it would still have someone like Charlotte Rampling in that role. You know what I mean? But the fact that there's like complete, there's, I don't recognize anyone in this film at all. I'm sure that they've all, you know, done something to make their mothers proud. But looking at their IMDBs, there's not, especially with the young men, there's not a lot happening with them before now. They're all lovely. I mean, our main guy is basically the Jamie Dornan you can afford, not the one you asked for Christmas.
Okay, but I would not turn him away.
No, neither would I. I mean, cut-rate Jamie Dornan is still, you know, close enough to Jamie Dornan. He also looks like Angelina Jolie. Like, he looks like a combination of the two of them.
He looks to me like Chuck Bass from Gossip Girl, but if he looks better.
Oh, that guy's so ugly. My mind didn't even go there. That guy is so ugly. I hope he's listening and then he kills himself. No, I'm just kidding.
Keep that in yourself.
And then, you know, Warren is very, very handsome. He's like, he's exactly perfectly groomed to the ideal aesthetic of gay men today. And even if not, he'd still be very cute. He's very, very nice body and all that stuff. But he's a selfish jerk throughout this entire movie. And he wants everything both ways. And no one ever really holds him to account for it. The closest to that being the, you know, the high octane moment at the party when his evil little boyfriend, who's not evil, punches Mark out. Is that his name? Our main guy?
Yeah.
Mark. Punches him out, and then he's like, are you going to do anything? Are you going to say anything? And he doesn't do anything because he can't, you know. And that's the only time, and then he's punished for that, obviously. But I still feel that there's a lack of following through on pointing out to him, like, you're in love with me, and yet you, like, why I spent this whole movie being like, why don't you just leave your boyfriend and be with this guy since you're obviously in love with him? And at the end, I didn't understand why he couldn't just leave his boyfriend and be with him.
Yeah, because even in like movie like Unfaithful, like the tempter, that, what do we call it? The opposite of a temptress? A tempterer? Anyway, the Olivier Martinez character.
Yeah.
He like...
We can call him a temptress. He's pretty enough. Look at those eyes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Where is he now?
He's aged like a straight guy.
To the extent that he can still get it?
I think he could still get it, but he's aged. He's aged like a French guy.
Oh, yeah. So he's been smoking indoors.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But even in that movie, it's obvious what he's out for. He's just like, his mind's in his dick. He's not thinking 5 minutes into the future.
Yeah.
And in this, it's like, it's really unclear if he is, if he gets high on the chaos or if he really loves him. Like I think it is
clear that he loves him though, because he participates in the montage. And as we know from Fatal Attraction, when you participate in the montage, you deserve what you get. This is not a movie in which he is just being a fuckboy and Mark is deluding himself into thinking that he's in a real relationship or that he's in love, and then finally has to come to terms with the fact that it's just physical at the end. He goes skiing with them. They kiss over Christmas presents. I'm like, okay, so I guess your parents are being told that this is a guy, or do you know, because then it turns out his mom knows that he's cheating on him, but they're like opening presents together with his parents. So they're acting like a couple. Yeah, they're acting like a couple and they're doing romantic things. So then at the end, shouldn't it be about them deciding, like, are we going to try to be together? Or does Warren say to him, I can't break up with my boyfriend because, you know, I work for his parents' company, or, you know, something. Like, I didn't understand why he was so tied to that boyfriend, because he doesn't seem to be that happy with him, because we never really get much of a read on their relationship anyway. So what's the problem here?
I kind of wish Warren was just a psycho.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he is inconsistent. From the beginning, he's like, no one can know that we did this because my boyfriend is also on the team. And he's not into open relationships and he's super jealous. Oh, but let me take you to an amusement park where we're going to make out on a Ferris wheel. Apparently, no one else goes to the amusement park. And then let's do all these other public things all the time. So why isn't he also being held to account for the fact that he's so inconsistent in that regard?
Yeah, I found him more legible if he was just like a psycho who likes to sabotage himself. Like, there's a moment where they're making out by like some brick wall and he looks over and he looks at these two guys who one of them maybe looks like his boyfriend.
I wondered who that was. I was going to ask you if you knew who that was because I watched it twice and I couldn't tell.
He looks like in that scene, he's like the Will Arnett character in Sex and the City. Like, he gets off on fucking outdoors.
Right.
And that would track because he gets the guy to take a picture of him basically doing an OnlyFans photo.
Yes.
Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, he's holding his dick under the covers.
Totally.
And if you pay $3, you'll see 30 more pictures like that.
Right.
Yeah, he just...
Not naming just names, Matt Doobie. Who charges 14 bucks a month for his OnlyFans, and then you have to pay 25 to see more than a 3-minute video every time, every pop. Make your money.
Anyway, in this economy with the cost of groceries...
Well, no, it's just like it's the internet. You think that you're the last hot blonde I can find boning on the internet? You think I need to spend top dollar for this? If you were on a Disney show or something, like, I'd understand with the excitement, but you're just another hot model.
I can Google image search felching, and these people are charging $14 a month for this.
Exactly. Anyway.
But yeah, it would just seemed more legible if he was just the wrong guy, like a Pandora's box, like total psycho, and then it all just goes downhill from there.
Yeah, because the fact that he's not made me keep thinking that we were going to get to some kind of emotional crossroads that we never get to. Of him, of Mark waking up and saying, listen, I am single. We have spent this time together. We are in love. Are you going to do this with me or not? But he never does. And then he just like makes eyes with a new guy at the end. And I'm like, oh, I didn't feel that that was the emotional beat we were going for. This movie's kind of all over the place. And as you texted me so clearly before watching it, it takes 135 minutes to cover ground that could it easily have done in 90.
And if you're going to take that much time to tell a really basic story, at least have someone shooting themselves at the New Year's Eve party, like in Boogie Nights.
Well, that, and also, if you're going to take up the extra time with all that footage of rugby, because apparently this is something the director has personal experience with, and something that, I mean, I appreciated that there was a lot of really well-shot sports in this movie, because it made it look like a movie with a budget. You know, it didn't seem like a half-assed BGM. It was, you know, a legit film. But maybe give me more of a read on why the rugby is so important to our main character or to these guys in general, you know, as gay men who are devoting themselves so deeply into the world of sports, which is traditionally not a world open to gay men. Because we never find out what their day jobs are, even though he does mention having something to do with work at one point. So it's like, is this an escape from that? Is it a relief from that? Or is your work related to this? Like, I never, because they behave like professionals, but I don't think they are professional players because they have jobs.
I would understand if it was about community, the community that it brings, and yeah. Pinky, the one bearish player on the team, he yeah. even says as much. And I can honestly say, on a corny note, I have found a sort of community of people in my league. So I get that. That could have been explored more if that's what's at stake.
Well, given that it lengthens the running time of the movie so much, to have so much time spent on the team and the rugby and the subplot drama of his best friend on the team, who is an alcoholic and appears to be in love with him.
Is that what he is? He's an alcoholic? I just thought he was bad at drinking and he's the friend that everyone is embarrassed by.
Well, they give him a non-alcoholic drink at the end, so it appears that he's like the one person in England who has pursued some manner of sobriety. Because as a good friend of mine who moved here from England told me, she didn't know she was an alcoholic until she got to Canada. Because she blended in.
How does she feel right
now? By the way, one of my favorite places in the world to go, and London is my favorite city I've ever been to, so I don't want to hear anything from our British listeners. I do not say this in a derogatory manner, but those people do love to drink.
No, I love a British pub. I support all of their drinking habits. I even more so support their eating habits, because bacon every morning is fantastic.
Yeah, although in this movie we're expected to believe that two guys who have just spent all night drinking and eating pub food are ready to go anal right away, which I don't think so. I don't think that's gonna happen.
There should totally just be like casual, like off the cuff, like Mookie stains all over the sheets.
Well, that, or like he spreads his legs and you suddenly just see the Sweeney Todd oven open, you know.
Yes.
Like, it's not good. It's not good, whatever's going on down there. A country that's all about curry takeaways every night? I don't think so. I don't think it's the bottom capital of the world.
I want to say something good for this movie for a minute, because we're not following a chronology. So let me just say something good for this movie. The fucking looks good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know what? Actually, there's a lot of things I did like about this movie. And I did like these boys. They were all the boys were cute. Everyone was a good actor, other than the mom. For some reason, I thought she was bad. But everyone was a good actor, and it looks great. It's beautifully photographed. I could see this director going on to make something that I really like. But this movie needs to be heavily edited, and it needs someone to sharpen all of its stakes, because everything is too vague. And it feels like he created the melodrama and then filled in the details after, because I did not feel the need for how serious and whiny, and not whiny, but tearful everything got by the end.
Yeah, a little whiny too. I just felt like, I mean, this is me coming from, you know, being blindfolded and tied to the radiator, but like, I feel like everybody else on that team would just realistically would just been like, oh yeah, two other people are fucking. Well, you know, like they're all just a nest fucking each other in different arrangements.
I mean, it's a gay rugby team. At the one point they have trouble towards the end. They're struggling basically after Mark leaves the team. They're struggling because of gay sex drama. But it's like, isn't that the reason why you shouldn't have a gay rugby team in the first place? Like this can't be an isolated event of any kind.
Bill, I found out from one of the people on my team who also organizes Toronto's gay dodgeball league, that gay dodgeball sold out in 30 minutes. Like, yeah. There's a world of people out there trying to fuck through sports.
Yeah, because you assume that everyone else on the team is going to be fit, even if you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get there and it's all Bob Hoskins. Which, again, for some people, it's
Bob Hoskins and mermaids.
But speaking of fantasies, as Madonna would call them, that's the other thing about this movie, is that it wants to be so serious, but it is also a fantasy as well. I mean, all the sex that they have. When they make out in the bathroom the first time, their t-shirts are completely dry, which, considering that they've been partying at a pub for the last few hours, is, you know, and that's because this is this movie where everything's designed to look perfect and pretty. Their lovemaking is, listen to me, Rona Barrett. Their sex scenes are all like, they're all hot, and they're also, they look great. Everything's lit to perfection. Everyone's hair is always great, all that stuff. So, you know, this movie's trying to have it both ways. One thing I did really love is that after he leaves the first time, Mark distracts himself by doing laundry, and somehow they shoot it, and it looks like he's never done laundry before in his life. The actor's just sitting in front of the machine, pressing a button, and then amazed at what happens next.
Okay, you said that all of them are mostly good actors. Mark has a few moments where I don't think he's keeping up with the people around him. One of them is when, was his name Warren Hunt?
Warren, yes. Yeah.
Warren buys him tequila.
And no one thought to make the joke, what a cunt. Warren Hunt, what a cunt. I mean, these are British people. They're the masters of word puns. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, that's all of their drug queens.
Yeah.
No, Warren buys them, says, can I get you a drink? And then gets them tequila. And then he looks at him like, oh my God, you're crazy. Like, like, are you serious? Oh my God, tequila? He acts like he's offering him like noon hour cocaine.
To give the actor a little bit of fair due, this is a character that plays in one key throughout this entire film. And it requires, I think it requires a skill that you can't learn in order to make a character not annoying when they are written to be annoying. Because he picks the wrong men. He's veering basically between a really shitty boyfriend who keeps saying like, oh, did you play your fake football game again?
Oh, we're talking about her in a moment.
Yeah. Or this like completely selfish guy that he's having an affair with. And then he's crying all the time. It's hard to find an actor who can make that interesting. Think of a show like Jane the Virgin, which I got sick of after like, I don't know, 3 seasons. But if it wasn't for the fact that that girl is so incredibly watchable, that character would have driven me crazy after only one episode, because it's another case of something where it's just the same thing over and over again. If you're not a Nicole Kidman fan, you can't get through The Portrait of a Lady, because she spends the last hour of that movie crying over and over again.
Okay, fair.
But I think you're right. I mean, I think he doesn't keep up, but it would be hard to find, on the level of this movie's working at, it would be hard to find somebody who could rise above the monotony of a character that this director is not addressing, because like, his boyfriend is so shitty. He's also really cute, but he's very shitty. He's away on business 362 days of the year. And every time he comes home for 10 minutes, he's like, oh, were you playing football again? Like, why are you being so shitty? Aren't you glad that your boyfriend's doing something while you're away?
You think this guy was cute? You know, in 3 years, he's going to look like Bill Nighy, right?
Okay, but this is part of my fuck them while they're young campaign, Greg. This is why you've been tied to the radiator a few more times than usual this year. We're trying to get you taken care of before you're on the next cycle. You know that I've always said gay men only have three ages, right? Bottom, debonair, and pity fuck. So, you know, we're just going to ride that middle for as long as we can. But then the boyfriend, like, everything happens all at once, which is that at the New Year's party is when, via the rather actually clever plot machination of this text that the shitty guy accidentally reads while he's taking a photo. There's a great shot in that scene of the bitchy guy, like, giving him a stare as soon as he realizes what's going on. That's a really, really great shot in this movie. A really great takeaway moment.
And a good bitchy character.
Yeah. And then he gets, like, smacked out in front of everyone. He goes home. He's, like, already bleeding from the mouth and crying. He comes home to find his boyfriend crying on the couch because he found the OnlyFans photo of Warren. But you guys are in an open relationship, so are you mad that he broke the rules? Because they had rules about, like, it can't be anyone from rugby, and it can't be someone more than once, or whatever.
I think the main rule, as someone who is having their cake and eating it, I think the main rule is you're supposed to communicate. So the fact that he's hiding it suggests cheating and possibly a relationship.
But wouldn't that make you mad versus him crying on the couch like he's a jilted wife who just found out that her husband's been keeping a mistress in her own apartment for the last 6 months?
I mean, we've already established this movie doesn't have an even tone.
Right. Because he's crying like he's been betrayed, but he's always treating Mark with disdain, and that seems to be part of their dynamic, right? Is that Mark probably is one of those, like, sweet little bottoms who thinks that when guys are mean to him, that means they're going to take care of them, because that's how he was raised. So why isn't he just like, I can't believe you did this. We had a rule. Get the fuck out of my apartment.
Also, why does he show up to the final rugby game just to be like, it was finally nice to see you play, but we're not getting back together?
Well, not even though we're not getting back together, Mark says, oh my God, do you want to go for a drink or something? It's like, why are you pursuing this guy? He finally shows up to your game for the first time after 30 years of you guys being together. And he spends the whole time being like, this game is bullshit. Do you even understand what's going on? And that girl's like explaining the rules to him. He still doesn't even want to be there.
That girl, who sounded annoying and looked annoying, we can call her Emily in Glasgow. When she said to him, like, they're called laws, not rules, and nobody understands them. That's pretty funny because people who get into rugby can spend like a whole season playing it till they realize they haven't really known it, how to play it.
Yeah, because it's like primitive football, basically. So of course the rules are a lot more complicated and hazy.
It has a really dense playbook. There's a lot of weird things to it.
Is it always muddy? Is it always a game that where you end up muddy? Because in this movie, it's one thing that when they're playing in the rain, but then there's a perfectly clear day when they're playing. And is that just British soil that's doing that? It feels
that
like
could just be,
yeah.
I mean, that might just be part of the erotic intention of the director. Like, oh, get them covered in mud, get them wet.
But it's like a perfectly clear day and they're playing on grass. And then you look over and the ball is caked all over in mud. And so are the guys from head to toe.
Yeah, honestly, this whole rugby season I just finished, I think I only like had dirty cleats.
Oh, all right. I mean, part of the appeal of fucking athletes is that they're always showering, so that's disappointing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Can we talk about Mark's boyfriend a bit longer? How much do you love that every time he's on screen, he's making a bed, doing laundry, fluffing up a pillow,
and insulting
telling him he made his bed in the guest room?
Yeah.
It's a funny take on the honey come to bed role, except he has, like, one or two more features to him because he's also a cunt.
Yeah, and also, why isn't Mark giving him something back, like when he kicks him out and he's like, but you're never here, like you're always going on long business excursions and I don't know what you're up to on those, and I'm sorry that I broke the rules, but we are in an open relationship, and like, so why does you're even seeing this photo make you real? How does seeing that photo make you realize everything that's going on, everything that we as an audience have been seeing? How does it make you realize that you're in a relationship with this guy? Because you took a photo of a guy that you were in bed with, like, big deal. First of all, if I found that photo in my apartment, I don't even know that I'd know right away that it was my boyfriend who took it. I'd be like, oh, isn't this the guy from your team? Did he post this online? Like, what is this?
Yeah, if I saw that photo, I'd think, oh, my boyfriend in my open relationship did something slutty with the Polaroid camera.
If I even assume that it was him who took it, like, for all I know, his teammate could have given him that photo. Like, I would first say, what is this? Because that's the other thing about this movie, is that it's 2.5 hours long, and yet it cuts corners narratively in which everyone seems to know things. The coach at one point says to him, oh, you've got a lot going on right now. Like, wink, wink. And it's like, what, he knows about this affair that these two are having? Like, or what, does he know something else?
I mean, is the coach gay? Because it just seems like they all know each other's shit.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Is it actually a gay rugby team? Or?
Oh, it is. It definitely is.
Okay.
Yeah, I picked that up pretty quickly.
And does a gay rugby team have to have a gay rugby coach? Or?
They actually don't. And they're hard to find. So the league I play in, it's a gay league. And our coach is straight.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. But he gives those pep talks in the shower as quickly as possible before he gets
and
out.
And it's a shame because he looks like Bob Hoskins.
Oh, yeah. Coach just stares at the ceiling the entire time, like, don't let them think I'm looking. People in movies always put their underwear on after sex, and I don't understand. Either don't show them naked or have them get fully dressed. No one puts their underwear on and nothing else after sex. Certainly not me.
If we're going to another room, sometimes I do. Just because I find postcoital flaccid peen sometimes just like kind of distracting when we...
Well,
when we
and also some of us have thigh rub. Also, we don't want to walk around naked, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that part too. No, like I have like, I don't know, fuck, put on your undershirt, a pair of undies, and then like go to the kitchen and like eat leftover pizza or something.
But that makes more sense than just putting on your underwear as you get out of bed.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Yeah. And it's a movie thing. It's just, I feel like it's a movie thing.
Yeah, again, getting back to Sex and the City, unless you're the guy who has to shower right after fucking Miranda.
Yeah.
Here's a cliche I love in gay movies. And I say it specifically in gay movies because I think in some of the ones I've watched that as homework for this podcast, I've noticed that it seems the directors think that their main actor is such a cutie, such a matinee idol, that they need to have scenes where the camera is just paused on them really busy place, looking like they're deep in thought or ruminating on something. And this happens more often than not, and the show Queer as Folk did this all the time.
Yeah.
It happens in bars. It's always a cutie leaning over a railing, staring off over the crowd.
It's also the post-weekend effect, which is that Weekend was such a, you know, in many ways a work of art in terms of its creating potent, quiet images of men in space together. And everyone wants to make that movie ever since, because it's also one of the few gay movies to really achieve critical acclaim, English language anyway. And I can feel its effect on so many movies ever since that movie was made. And a lot of it is aesthetic in terms of the way, you know, men are shot just quietly being in space. Yeah.
Yeah. You're probably right about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to think on that a bit.
To the point that like even Andrew Haig himself has gotten away from doing it. You know, like he hasn't made, although, you know, Charlotte Rampling staring at the end of 45 years is a similar aesthetic vibe, but.
Anyway. And she gets to have that moment where she like grabs onto herself and cries a little moment at the anniversary party.
Oh, God, that movie is so goddamn good. It's so goddamn good.
This is the best part about BGM, is you get to, in the middle of talking about how bad a movie is, you get to talk about how good other movies are.
Yeah, and then try not to get distracted. Lovely to see Cardiff in this movie. They go on a little field trip to a game in Cardiff, and they party at, I think it's called Mary's, St. Mary's, the place. It's I've been there. I recognize that sign right away, that neon pink sign out front where they were hanging out at that bar. Cardiff is not very large. Its central downtown is not very large, and it's also not accessible by cars. It's basically like an outdoor mall. Their main streets in the center. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, and so you just walk through all these stores and bars and restaurants and the odd carousel for some reason. They have a lot of carousels in Cardiff. Anyway, beautiful town. I love Cardiff, and I loved seeing that place because it reminded me of a very happy trip I had there a few years ago.
I'd like to go to Wales sometime.
Wales is lovely. It's, I don't, I'm not going to get in trouble for saying this, I hope. It's my least favorite of the three in the UK, but only by comparison. I still loved it. Yeah. And I also spent the entire time drunk, so I don't even remember a lot of it. Anyway.
Were you drunk like Henry is drunk? Because that guy's having his first drink ever in every frame of this movie.
Yeah, he totally is. He totally is. And then he has a drama subplot because he feels ignored by Mark because Mark has basically been... And it's like, how is it even possible to ignore your friends when you're having a clandestine affair? You're not spending every waking moment with your paramour, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, but I also didn't feel the validity of Henry's bitchiness. Like,
because we don't, it takes a while before we're like, oh, he's attached to him. Like, they seem to be buddies the way everyone's buddies on that team. But it takes a while before we get the impression that Mark is sort of his big brother on that team and that he needs him for that. So there's a lot that I realized by the end of the movie that it took me a while to figure out because I did feel so lost in this movie at the beginning. The scene, though, where he blows him when the other person comes into the bathroom, that scene is actually really sexy.
Well, it's the key unfaithful scene.
Yeah, you're right. It is. Yeah. It's the fucking in the hallway. Yeah.
I love the fucking in the hallway and Unfaithful. Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk more about 45 years and Unfaithful.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. So yeah, I just wonder, like, is Warren a properly worked out character because he's possessive? He's hypocritical. I feel like none of these things are. And like, why is his boyfriend still with him at the end if he finds out that he's been betraying him, given that his boyfriend cares so much about monogamy? I just needed more information about that situation.
And why does he say tequila puts hair on your chest when it's so obvious that he shaves his?
I can't drink tequila. Do you know that? It actually makes me depressed. It like, I my attitude just goes really glum when I have it, including having just a little bit of it in like one of those pre-mixed cooler cans I had. And I just suddenly felt really bad about life.
That's interesting. Yeah. The night of, not the next day.
Yeah, the night of. Like, I just suddenly can't find the positive side to anything. It makes me... And then if I have... The one time I had a lot of it, I was really, really sick in a way that no other booze ever made me sick. But yeah, it really ruins me. I don't know. Something, I guess, chemically I react to that doesn't work well with me.
It's really interesting. Yeah, people talk about, like, different effects that, like, certain liqueurs or liquors have on them.
Yeah.
And... I don't really know what does anything for me other than that, like, just something with too much sugar will make me barf my life out the next morning.
Yeah, and that's draft. A lot of people, yeah. One thing I do enjoy, though, is a cigarette by an open window. And I have to tell you, when he comes downstairs and finds his mom smoking like that, it made me so wistful for that. Just, and to smoke in the cold, too, like when it's just cold enough. God, I'm trying not to smoke, so it made me, that was like my favorite part of the movie.
Be honest, how many of your cigarettes are out the basement window?
None.
How?
I can't be bothered to. Yeah, I don't do it at home, ever. I can't be bothered to clean up after myself. So, and also, I have a big patio.
Good for you.
Yeah. That's and now, great. That, now that my dad is bedridden, he can't see me and yell at me. So take that, dying old man.
I had a good, like, summer of living with two roommates when I was 1920, yeah. And... we had a kitchen window that we would smoke cigarettes next to.
Yeah.
And yeah, I look back on it romantically.
I'm trying to only do it when I go to our mutual friend's house because I like smoking on her patio. That's it.
Oh, that is the prime smoking spot.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I've only smoked twice since I got back from Greece. Like not only two cigarettes, but like two occasions because... I've been to her place and we went to the cottage.
Wow. Yeah. Have you noticed like stairs feel better?
No.
Okay. No. I noticed right away as soon as I quit smoking that I like really mundane everyday moving tasks are easier.
So he goes skiing in wherever they go. I mean, it's a journey. I don't think it's in England because I don't think you can ski anywhere in England. So it's
the low part of the movie.
It's what?
It's the low part of the movie.
Yeah, it's probably, yeah, France maybe, or I don't think it's Switzerland. It feels like that's a bit far to go, but I don't know. Unless there is somewhere you can go skiing in England, but it's news to me. I don't think there's mountains there. Anyway, they go skiing. It's probably Andorra. My friend's gone skiing in Andorra. And Warren is like, I don't want to go skiing, even though he looks like he's a snob about ski. He looks like the kind of guy who like, is that your gear when you're on the ski slope? He looks like that guy. So he takes to it like a duck to water. And then, yeah, he comes downstairs. His mom is smoking a cigarette and they have a talk. And she talks about how, like, by the way, your dad's been cheating on me our whole marriage. And you just learn to live with things, even though I'm clearly an alcoholic who hit on your boyfriend as soon as he walked in the door. She's so inappropriate with the young man that her son brings to her house.
Yeah, she's kind of like Shirley MacLaine in Postcards from the Edge.
Oh, worse. Absolutely worse. Because Shirley MacLaine has convinced herself that she's being appropriate, whereas this woman's not even trying to hide it. She's like, so, you're an awfully handsome little morsel that my son's brought into the house, you know?
Yeah, she looks like she's cheating on the dad, not the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought that she was going to reveal that. I thought she's going to be like, and so since he does whatever he wants, I do whatever I want. But then she, you know, she goes off on a different tangent. And then the next day he's talking to his dad and he's like, by the way, mom told me all this shit about you two and how you've been cheating on her whole life. Like, why are you talking to your dad about the stuff that your mom was talking about?
And why did they keep this in the movie? This all could have been cut out.
Yeah, because it doesn't really inform anything. He doesn't get anything from his dad. And all his dad says is whatever makes you happy, which, by the way, when parents say that, that's like when a woman says it's fine. No parent means it when they say whatever that makes you happy. That's what they're saying because they haven't figured out how to criticize you effectively yet. Certainly it's the case with my mother. If she says whatever makes you happy, I know that she thoroughly disapproves.
Someone say whatever makes you happy is a reminder that you haven't given them grandkids.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's those people who are like, oh, whatever, my children did whatever they wanted with their life, but do I complain? No, I never complain. And you're like, you've complained every fucking day of my life. Not that I know about this. Then they leave. Their dad takes them to the airport and they both get into the back seat of the car like he's an Uber driver. I'm like, what are you guys, 14 years old? I used to do that in high school. Why are you sitting in the back? Jesus Christ. So you can hold hands anyway. And it's after that, that the big reveal happens where they escape to a room to have sex at the New Year's Eve party. It's like, you guys deserve to be caught. You cannot take a single night off. Every time you're anywhere, you've got to steal a moment together.
Yeah, that was particularly sloppy. Although it did set us up for the performance of Pinky. That guy was pretty funny when he entered the scene.
He was, and I guess the purpose of that is also to set up the fake, which is that we think that them getting caught there is what's going to be the undoing, and it ends up being something else. But it also, it's to your point about Warren not being a psychopath, it would make more sense for his character if the fact that these things keep happening is because he has this, like, pathological need to be caught. You know, like, the fact that he can't just be at the same party with this guy without trying to steal a moment with him. It's like, can't you just have an affair in other times and then not get caught in this time? Or do you have a compulsion where you need to do something that you only like being with Mark because it's something bad? You know, we never get to the bottom of that.
That would have had depth. That would have been really interesting.
Well, it's not unreasonable to ask a movie that is 135 minutes long to have depth. Length and depth. This is what we're always looking for, whether it's in rugby, a dick, or a movie.
Fast, hard, and deep.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, please go on.
No. I was just going to say, the movie really lost me when it switched from rugby to skiing. So I was very happy that it was bookended with rugby.
Well, yes. And then everything falls apart. He obviously stops going to rugby games. He breaks up with his boyfriend. He's forced to move out. Warren starts sending him, he looks at his phone and he's not answering Warren's texts. Warren sends him way more texts than a top ever will in the history of the world. It's just like pages and pages of texting like a girl.
Yeah, texting like he's not a finite resource.
And then we catch back up with, And then we catch back up with the B plot of this financial struggle, which is that, oh, we're probably going to drop the B team because it turns out, you know, like, we haven't really been keeping up with that. And again, if you're making a movie in which a story involves the financial survival of a team, that should also be informed by, like, finding out what the team means to these guys, like I said, in terms of its contribution to their personal lives. And that's it. And then, yeah, at the end, he returns to the game like Dottie in A League of Their Own. And is that her name? I'm suddenly blanking. I've only seen the movie 800 billion times. It's Dottie, right? Kit and Dottie? Yeah. He returns to the game. And then, so I think, okay, now we're going to wrap things up. His boyfriend comes to the game, so they're going to have, like, a nice farewell. They don't, because he's like, please go for a drink with me. And his boyfriend's like, no, I just came to say that I came to one game, and now I'm going to fucking leave you. And then Warren pulls him aside, and they cry in a secret little alcove. And I thought, okay, now they're going to make the leap. And they don't. And, like, he doesn't even say to him, like, Mark would well be within his rights to give Warren an ultimatum and say, make up your mind. Don't just sit here crying over me. Make up your mind. You're either going to leave your boyfriend and be with me, which there's no reason why he shouldn't, because again, we haven't established that they, I don't know, own a house together, or they've been together for so long, or he's the only one who gets him or whatever. Or you're going to leave me alone. You're not going to talk to me anymore. We're not going to fuck anymore. And you're just going to go be with your boyfriend, since if that's what makes you happy, go do that and leave me alone. And he doesn't say either. He basically, like, they just have a tearful kiss goodbye, and that's it. And then he makes eyes with someone new at the bar. And it's like, I feel like this movie was spent in this lengthy running time moving towards a turn of a character's, you know, self-realization that never actually happens.
Yeah, I felt like the ending, him getting rejected by his boyfriend, is it Richard? Yes. And then rejecting Warren, you think he's going to come somewhere up the middle and find self-actualization like Holly Hunter and Broadcast News. But
yeah, no. To realize why he picks the wrong men, and to think about the fact that, like, he doesn't speak up for himself in relationships, apparently.
No, but instead, this is so shallow. We get him looking over the room at a new hottie, and then he looks in the direction of the camera like, oh, whatever. Here's a new one.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Who's also going to turn out to be a nightmare. It's like, I don't feel good for you, because this is just going to be another disaster on your part.
Can you imagine being friends with Mark?
Yeah, it would be a lot. I would spend the whole time being like, if you're not going to listen to me, then stop asking me my advice. That's that kind of friend he is. Where you're totally just like, what? Just do whatever you want. I'm not going to judge you if you just do whatever you want. But if you keep wondering why it's not working out, and I tell you, and then you go and do the same thing, well, then you're insane.
Yeah, it's also the friend that asks you for your honest opinion about things that you're not comfortable telling, because at some point you have to tell them their personality is broken.
Well, or that they just don't want to hear what you do have to say, which is that actually, you know, like, do you think he secretly likes me? It's like, no, I think he's taking advantage of you and you make it easy, you know? And so if you don't want to hear that, then don't fucking ask me.
Sorry, was that too much? Was I too honest?
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you're not honest the first 10 times the person asks you the same thing, you know you're going to get honest at some point, and it's not going to go well.
No, it's not.
But what is going well is having you on the show, which is always an absolute pleasure, and I appreciate it.
Look at that segue.
Segue
is going well.
Slick as snot. Greggy Poo, I know that you are not on social media, so this is the point at which I usually tell my guest to tell everyone where they can follow you. But if there's anything you want to promote or share and direct our listeners to, now is the time.
I have nothing to promote, honestly. Thank you for having me on. I love being on this show. It's fun, like, chatting with you all the time. Wow. I like watching even bad movies with you, Bill.
I know. I do too, and I appreciate you doing this. And I will see you very soon, and we will go to a movie very soon, of course. And thank you again. And to our listeners, please feel free to follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. Write to us at badgamemovies2013@gmail.com. And I think that's it. Visit us at badgamemovies.com, and see you next week.